Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of Sans. This is Sans News Bites, annotated news update from the leader in information, security, training, certification, and research. This is for the newsletter, August 26th, 2025. This is Volume 27, Number 62. Thanks for listening to the program. This is a twice-weekly newsletter, and you can catch any newsletters we've not been able to give you at sans.org/newsletters. You may also find a copy of this newsletter in the show notes, either through the RSS feed or on the blog at the just-renewed domain name jaredtech.help. Enjoying the programming that we have to offer you? Why not consider donating to the network? It's not a requirement, but it will make sure to keep your podcast on the air. RSS does not cost you a dime, but it now costs us because the free provider we were using doesn't want our podcast. You decide what you want to donate. It's not up to me. You can always subscribe for free, and you can even send me an email or an iMessage at tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. Text or WhatsApp 804-442-6975. Or you may call the comment line at 888-405-7524. And if I'm available, I can take your call and you can give me your thoughts live. My line may be available during certain shows, such as the Independent Artist Spotlight and Show. With that being said, let's go ahead and cover the newsletter. And this time, we do include some of the editor's thoughts, because they aligned with what I was thinking when reading the newsletter, and they said it best. And, as I wrote in the top paragraph before the table of contents, some of what we'll read here and covered on TSB may also be covered on the blog. Here is the table of contents for today, and this episode of the program, starting with top of the news. Microsoft limits some map sharing. And by the way, this is M-A-P-P, not like your typical map. This is a specific project they run. The second item is MITRE updates most important hardware weaknesses list. CISA releases updated, quote, minimum elements for a SBOM, end quote, for public comment. Here is the rest of the week's news. CISA adds Apple Image I.O. 0-day to KEV. And by the way, this is why you need to update to 18.6.2 of iOS and other Mac versions, which will be talked about when we get there. Data I.O. disrupted by ransomware. Healthcare breach updates. Davida, Aspire, Rural Health, CPAP, Medical, and, of course, You will probably want to know this right now, because we posted this already. It won't surprise me if today's newsletter, which is the 29th of August, includes the recently announced news dealing with TransUnion. It's not in the 26th newsletter, because that came out in an article on the 28th, but I might as well mention it now that it won't surprise me if they'll talk about it on the 29th newsletter, and we will make sure to try and get that newsletter out as quickly as possible. The next item is one that I know that we've talked about on TSB and is also blogged at the aforementioned jaredtech.help. Maryland Transit Administration disclosed cyber incident that is disrupting certain mobility paratransit services. Nevada cybersecurity incident is affecting the state's online presence and phone line services, and they were hoping to actually have the phone lines up on Tuesday when that newsletter was written. If we find anything else on this, we'll be sure to pass it on, but sometimes we don't find anything. The next item, and more than likely the last, if my memory serves me correctly, prison sentence for Eaton Corp former employee and saboteur. By the way, this is a Braille file I'm reading from, and if you want the aforementioned Braille file, send me a note and let me know. I've been playing with different formats, especially with the table of contents. One episode I had it as a sublist where I had the headings like top of the news and so forth as the main list and the items underneath it, while others have had the subheadings with the just main list. And by the way, Sans News Bites is a Sans educational newsletter. We are reading it so that you are able to be aware of what's going on, because we can't cover it all. And we would like to thank Sans for allowing us to subscribe, and I'm sure they don't mind us putting out the info they have. I do quote and make sure I tell you when we are putting their content, i.e. their editorial comments, in the podcast. We're going to start on page one for those who are reading the Braille. And that is going to be the top of the news. And we're going to start with Microsoft, as Microsoft limits some map sharing. And again, this is MAPP, not your typical map like Google Maps, Apple Maps, Transit app, as they also have a map feature where you can see where your transit vehicle is on a map. Not that type of map. Okay? Microsoft's Activity Protections Program. Okay, so Microsoft's Active Projections Program, MAPP, provides certain software vendors with advanced notification of vulnerabilities that will be patched in the upcoming weeks. These notifications have typically included proof of concept code, and some participants are required to sign NDAs and NDAs, I had to sign one of these. These are called non-disclosure agreements. This means anything that's shared with you cannot be discussed with anyone. Okay? Not even your coworkers. Unless those coworkers are part of the NDA. It now appears that Microsoft will stop sharing proof of concept code with organizations in countries that require they share the information with their governments. Instead, the organizations in the countries in question will now receive a more general written description of vulnerabilities according to Bloomberg paywall, which first reported the change in Microsoft's policy. Earlier this year, it was suggested that information related to the SharePoint vulnerabilities was leaked prior to the patch release, leading to multiple compromises of vulnerable SharePoint servers around the world. The SharePoint vulnerabilities were initially addressed on July 8, 2025, in Microsoft's Patch Tuesday release for that month. Soon after, Microsoft admitted that the patches did not adequately address the vulnerabilities. They released new updates on July 21st. And before I read what I wrote and everything, I will say that sometimes you may not understand what is going on. You think you understand, and then you think you patch it, and you work with the people that reported it, and they tell you later, you know, this doesn't quite fix it. This is the issue. And this is still what it's doing. And in a lot of cases, the researchers that reported it and the vendor will work together to get an understanding of what exactly is going on and properly fix it. So, when I wrote that I agree with Dukes that PLC proof of concept should only be shared with the developer, not with others who may not need to know or use it to weaponize it into other things may not be meant for, is perfect. Because while I paraphrased there, in later sections, you'll see that I actually quoted them because I kind of thought the same thing, didn't know how to word it in my mind, so I just took what they had to say. The thought process also continues. The fact that no country was mentioned is fine, and I'm glad Microsoft is making this change. And my opinion is this. We know that certain countries who could possibly be named, but I'm going to follow their lead here, could be known to share data with the government. You should have never given them that to begin with, because all the government is going to do is find a way to give whoever's doing this in these countries, whatever actor or gang is doing this, it's giving them ammunition to use. And so maybe it's just time for companies in general to be vague until a patch is released. Once the patch is released, then you can, in theory, discuss it publicly, because it would be out of NDA. Now, maybe it shouldn't be disclosed right away. You should wait probably 30, 60, 90 days, and then disclosed, to give ample time for individuals and companies to patch. And if companies don't patch, and it's after 90 days, shame on them. We should not be holding their hand forever. It's not our job. So, at some point, companies need to update. Individuals need to update, if at all possible. And then, share what you know. Hopefully everybody's patched, and we won't have a problem. Okay. MITRE. MITRE updates most important hardware weaknesses list. MITRE has released an updated list of the 2025 CWE trademark most important hardware weaknesses, MIHW, updating the 2021 list. The new list comprises 11 items, including sensitive information in resource not removed before reuse, improper isolation of shared resources on system on a chip, SOC, on-chip debug and test interface with improper access control, and hardware internal or debug modes allow override of locks. MITRE writes, this update incorporates advancements in data collection and analysis, leveraging AI-assisted data collection alongside expert opinions from the Hardware CWE Special Interest Group, SIG, which includes subject matter experts from the hardware design, manufacturing, research, and security domains, as well as academia and government. This approach combines data-driven analysis with collaborative subject matter expertise. And I say, cool. I'm not a hardware guy. This might be definitely a good thing as we continue to try and get things more on a secure level. And only time will tell whether this will be effective or not. I'm not going to say one way or the other, because as I said, I'm not really versed in hardware that well. I understand what I need if I ever need another computer, and I want to stick with Windows. But at the same time, I wouldn't know how to put anything together and make sure all of this type of thing works. And I don't claim to be a programmer either. So, that is where we are. The final item in the top of the news section is CISA releases updated minimum elements for a SBOM for public comment. The U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, is asking for input on draft guidance for software bills of materials, SBOMs. The revised document includes a number of significant changes to the previous version of minimum elements for a SBOM, which the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, NTIA, published in 2021. CISA writes, additions introduces additions introduced in this document, component hash license tool name and generation context, provides information for improved risk-informed decisions regarding software security. This document also updates details around some elements, SBOM, author, software, producer, component, version, software identifiers, coverage, and accommodation of updates to SBOM data. To clarify the data expected in SBOMs for more uniform implementations. Other elements, component name, timestamp, dependency relationship, automation support, frequency, known unknowns, and distribution and delivery, update the earlier version of the elements to improve information quality and align with technological developments. This version removes the access controls element and incorporates access control considerations in distribution and delivery. The updated draft, which incorporates lessons learned from increased SBOM generation and usage, and provides an updated baseline for how software component information is documented and shared, was released for public comment on August 22nd, 2029. The comment period ends on October 3rd, 2025. And I will say, as we move to page 5, if you're following along in the Braille, where the rest of the week's news is posted as a heading, that if this applies to you as part of your programming, then I would take a look at this. There may be some links that you can go and read. Go into the newsletter, look this up, and make sure you get your comments heard, as the editorial team writes, because once implemented, this is what you're going to have to do. I'm not a programmer, so I'm the last one to start telling people what to do with their code. I know nothing about this, except that I thought that I had heard at one point that an S-bomb was some sort of malicious type of thing, because I remember it being talked about on Security Now, but it was so long ago that I don't honestly remember. I didn't realize that programming needed software bills of materials to be able to run. I know they use, depending on the language, various types of elements and integers and various things to make it run, but what bill of management needs to be developed for that? I don't really understand this. I'm putting the questions out, and if people have answers, you're more than welcome to send them my way. Email, iMessage, tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. Text or WhatsApp, 804-442-6975. Or you may call the comment line at 888-405-7524 and drop me a voicemail and let me know what you think. I'm not claiming to be an expert in this. I can comment on what I think, but what I'm telling you here is, if this applies to you, go look this up in the newsletter, go find those links, and get your comments in, because that is the only way that they're going to be able to either implement it as is or even make changes. Are you enjoying this program? Feel free to go over to jaredrimer.net, and there you'll find a link for a donations page. If you are not comfortable filling out forms and you would like to donate, I can take a credit card or a debit card. Just send me an email, give me a way to contact you, and we'll work out all of the details to make this work for you. I don't want you to struggle. And if you want a recurring subscription, I can set one up for you where you fill out the information, you check a box, you get one invoice that you have to do this for, and every invoice thereafter, it automatically takes it. If you no longer want the subscription, you contact me, hopefully within 24 hours of the subscription, and ask me to cancel that payment for you. Now, it's not a requirement, as I stated. Your podcast will always be free for you to download and listen to, but if you enjoy it, we would greatly appreciate it. If you're reading along in the Braille, we are on page 5, and by the way, if you would like a 30-cell copy of this, you may ask me for a 30-cell copy, and I can get you one. Your page numbers will then vary from where we are on the 40-cell, but you will be able to read it on your display. Here's the rest of the week's news. CISA adds Apple Image I.O. 0 day to Kev. The U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, has added CVE 2025-43-300, a 0 day Apple iOS, iPadOS, and macOS out of bounds write vulnerability in the Image I.O. framework to its known exploited vulnerabilities Kev catalog. The flaw was disclosed and patched by Apple on August 20th, 2025, and added to the Kev the following day. While further details of the exploitation have not been reported, Apple security advisories state that the company is aware of a report that this issue may have been exploited in an extremely sophisticated attack against specific targeted individuals. Rob Wright, Senior News Director at Dark Reading, notes examples of Apple choosing the term sophisticated in adversaries related to nation-state threats and spyware. Users must update to iOS 18.6.2, iPadOS 18.6.2, iPadOS 17.7.10, Mac OS Sequoia 15.6.1, Mac OS Sonoma 14.7.8, and Mac OS Ventura 13.7.8 to fix the flaw, and all federal civilian executive branch FCEB agencies must do so by September 11th, 2025, per CISA's directive. And I love the comment by Neely here, as I write, there's a comment by Neely that says it best. He writes, given that the update to multiple platforms was to address this single flaw, you should have deployed the update well ahead of the September 11th deadline. Speaking of which, have you noticed September is next week? That means you may not be able to use Monday, Labor Day, for deploying these updates. The exploit is a zero-click, no-user interaction scenario and can be triggered by processing a malicious image file via web page, email, or text message while the update is straightforward and doesn't take very long to install. Irrespective of targeting, this ounce of prevention feels like a worthy pound of cure. I am updated to 18.6.2 on the iOS side, as that's the only thing that I have here. But if you are not, it is recommended that you do. This sounds to me like a CVSS score of 10 where 10 is the worst, and that means you don't have to necessarily do anything to get owned. Please do your part to be as safe as possible with this, because as it states, you don't even have to interact with it. It just has to be delivered. All right. Now, we are moving along with our next item, which is a ransomware item, as Data.io disrupted by ransomware. Data.io, a global company providing advanced data and security programming solutions for flash memory-based intelligent devices and microcontrollers for automotive, Internet of Things, medical, wireless, consumer electronics, industrial controls, and other markets has filed a Form 8K with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission disclosing a ransomware attack that took place on August 16th, 2025. The company proactively took certain platforms offline upon discovering the attack, also initiating its response protocols, securing its global IT systems, and engaging third-party cybersecurity experts to support recovery and investigation. Data.io business operations have been disrupted, and while some functions have provisional restoration, there is not yet a timeline for full restoration of internal, external communications, shipping, receiving, manufacturing, production, and other services. The company anticipates third-party fees, restoration costs, and other expenses are reasonably likely to have a material impact on the company's results of operations and financial conditions. Affected individuals and regulatory authorities will be notified based on the ongoing investigation as the scope, nature, and impact of the attack become clear. The fact that nobody has taken responsibility and the data is not on a leak site is good, says Neely. Read the full comments on their newsletter, whose link is in the show notes and the blog. Dukes also wrote, and this may be an interesting thought, it says, one of the few, very few vendors that acknowledges a ransomware incident on their Form 8K. Perhaps with this newfound strength, they'll communicate what security controls failed that led to the attack. outside of prohibiting cryptocurrency transactions globally, which isn't going to happen, maintaining effective security controls is your only line of defense. And I also say that if you just don't interact with people that send you items that you know are either taken care of, like, let's say, a fake invoice or, you know, something to do with a delay of shipping or some other piece of email that you can just tell by reading it that you don't necessarily have to worry about it because you know how most companies work, then that'll solve a lot of this problem. But as we know, there are people who are convinced of these types of things, and as we've learned, these emails and text messages are getting more convincingly real. So, I get why people would believe what they are seeing, even though probably in the back of their mind they're thinking, that doesn't happen, but I need to take care of this because if I don't, we did not have any time to, you know, really think about it because it's, if I don't do it now, then this is what the problem is. And it's so convincing these days. I get it. Mistakes happen. What are you going to do the next time something like this happens? Right? And so these types of things are occurring because of communication that you are receiving that starts the entire thing. So, we need to be aware of what we're receiving, whether we think it's believable, and don't rush to make the wrong decision. I actually went to go buy something from a vending machine I learned how to use that's in our complex. Knowing that I had bought the last item, I figured, well, maybe they restocked it, because this is what I want. Well, it billed me for the item, even though it didn't return me anything. So, I placed a phone call to the office, not because I'm looking to get a refund, because the cost is so small that it honestly doesn't matter. And I also bought a different item anyhow. The long of the short of it is, I just wanted them to know that there wasn't any more of the particular item that I was actually billed for, and I don't know, you know, what the schedule is with restocking vending machines. Now, this is minor compared to, say, getting an email saying, oh, you got charged for this item, and you call the number trying to get your refund, and the people ask you for your billing details that may lead to other charges. They're actually not there to refund anything because there was never a charge to begin with. They're actually trying to collect your data. And that's just one type of email. But there are other types of email that could end up giving you a compromised machine at some point. But it all starts with some sort of communication. Unlike the vending machine issue, which, as I said, I'm not worried about the financial side of things. I just wanted them to know that it charged me for something that it didn't deliver to me, and I thought maybe they had already restocked the item. And I was also testing Apple Pay on the thing anyway, which is kind of cool, because then I could decide just to use a card and go get something if I'm interested in doing that. But I think I'm just going to do things a little differently and say, and take a picture and ask it, are there this item? Or what items are there in this row? And then I could decide what I want without having to be billed for something that is completely out. But these types of things happen. But it all is a learning experience, right? Okay, so I was charged, call it $2, for an item that wasn't there. Next time, I'm going to take a picture and say, are there any, I don't know, muffins available? And if it says there aren't, then I know that there aren't any muffins available. And then it's, what other breakfast items are in this machine? And where is it located? And so, you do the same type of thing with these types of emails. You call the company, like Apple, and you say, I got an email that says I was charged $999. You call Apple directly, 800-275-2273. Or 800-MY-APPLE, 800-692-775. And you can talk to them and tell them what you're seeing, and they can tell you yes or no whether that was billed to your account. You can even go into your transaction history and verify all that. So, there are things you can do. And if you get one of those emails that talk about, you know, shipping delays, you can call the carrier it claims to be and say, I'm getting this email with this number, but I don't know anything about it. And they can say, that doesn't match anything we have. Or they can tell you information about whatever's going on. That's what they're there for. And we wouldn't have to be dealing with a lot of these types of issues. And while one may have nothing to do with the other, they all can be related in your life's learning experience. I know I went a little bit on a tirade, but, you know, these types of things where, you know, you're seeing things that are, you know, not necessarily true, but they're getting you to act, and then you get infiltrated, and your data gets owned, is definitely something that we need to be a little concerned about. Just a little bit. Just like you being billed for something that you didn't get. While the price in this case is too small, I'm not going to fight it. I'll just send some money and pay it off. It's not a big deal. But It's a learning process. Okay, if it's going to do that, then I need to do this and make sure it's got what I want before I do what I want to do. Right? So, you know, it's all a learning experience. And, you know, a $2 mistake isn't going to kill me, but a mistake where somebody's going to charge you thousands and or, you know, get into your system because of a link that they told you could fix a problem? Just something to be aware of. And it goes back to the last item. We have a lot still to learn and a lot still to teach. Healthcare breach updates. DaVita, Aspire, Rural Health, CPAP Medical. Additional details have surfaced in the investigations of healthcare breaches that took place within the last year. Kidney dialysis provider DaVita notified the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office for Civil Rights, HHS OCR, that almost 2.7 million people had sensitive data stolen in a ransomware attack that partially encrypted its network on April 12th, 2025. But news sources have since heard from DaVita that the number may be closer to 2.4 million. And I'll just say, that's a good sign. And by the way, that 9 was, when I said April 9th, that came from the page change where we moved to page 9. And I should just ignore the page change, but I find it valuable in case my device skips. I can go to the page, and then figure it out from there where we are in the file. DaVita says the data stolen may include name, address, date of birth, social security number, health insurance related information, and other identifiers internal to DaVita, as well as certain clinical information such as health condition, other treatment information, and certain dialysis lab tech results. Ouch. Okay. Aspire Rural Health System of Michigan has reported to the Office of the Maine Attorney General and is notifying affected individuals that an unauthorized party had access to Aspire's internal network from approximately November 4th, 2024 to January 6th, 2025. My question is, why the hell are we finding out about this now? Upon discovering the attack, Aspire initiated containment and began investigating alongside third-party experts and determined by July 18, 2025 that nearly 140,000 people's personal data had been accessed. You should be keeping us informed and giving us data as you find out. You should not be waiting until the investigation ends. Aspire offers an information hotline staffed on weekdays and is offering complimentary credit monitoring membership to those affected. Like, that's going to do any good. Because that only does something after the fact. CPAP Medical Supplies and Services have begun notifying people of a data security incident that may affect the privacy of certain individuals' information. May? It probably already has. Well, okay, maybe the right word, but at this point, our information's already out there. I'm not doing the same thing here because we're about at the page change. CPAP Medical became aware in June 2025 that the December 2024 breach affected identifiable, protected health and personal information. Oh, that's nice. We can't even have our health information protected anymore. Well, then maybe I should just disclose everything to the world and be done with it. The company has notified the HHS OCR that incident affected more than 90,000 individuals. It's probably the same 90,000 that could be involved in other breaches too. Neely writes, while the update from DaVita appears to be a reduction in total impacted, it's still better a better proactive protecting your information than to face the uncertainty of not knowing if you're included. I would say just assume you are. Every breach, assume that you may be a part of it. He continues, besides, we have so many entities handling our data in one form or another, it's better to not rely solely on their security and incident response. Regularly review your data monitoring configuration to ensure the data is accurate and complete. If you haven't seen any communication from your provider in a while, that should be a red flag for you to follow up on. Well, I don't know about that, because I haven't seen my doctors in a while. I've been pretty healthy. So why would they contact me for anything? Murray wrote, digital health records have improved healthcare and are now essential. However, their adoption was delayed for a generation in a futile attempt to avoid the very kind of exposure of those records that we are now seeing today. The institutions that create and use those records seem peculiarly ill-equipped to protect them. No kidding. In an attempt to avoid being overly prescriptive, the HIPAA privacy rules required these institutions to make risk assessments that they were ill-equipped to make, and then required them to infer from these assessments adequate protection measures, methods, mechanisms, and procedures required in the face of an evolving technology and threat environment. The result has been little short of a disaster. it is time for more prescriptive regulation. And I don't know exactly what the result is going to be, because this must get fixed. This really got started when the insurance companies like Blue Cross got owned. And, you know, my local doctor may not necessarily be owned, but because I was a Blue Cross customer at one point, my information was with them as part of getting services from them. And even though I left Blue Cross and moved to different insurance companies, they never got rid of my data, apparently. So I've continued to get Blue Cross emails inviting me to sign up and how they're giving me, you know, giving us lower costs and such, but I'm not going back. My health care is all set now, and I don't have to worry about it. But that's when it all started. We've got big problems, and I don't really have a solution, because it's bad. It's really bad these days. All right, folks. The next item is actually one that we talked about on this week's Security Box, program number 252. Which you can find on your RSS feed. Maryland Transit Administration disclosed cyber incident that is disrupting service mobility paratransit services. The Maryland Transit Administration, MTA, and the Maryland Department of Information Technology, DOIT, are investigating a cybersecurity incident that has disrupted some elements of MTA's mobility paratransit services. MRA's core services are operating normally. Mobility paratransit services are operational, but are unable to schedule new trips or rebook existing trips. The incident has also affected the availability of some real-time MTA information and the MTA call center. All previously scheduled mobility services will be honored. MTA recommends that people requiring new rides contact CallRide. And Neely writes, MTA is providing both status and alternative options for impacted services, which are predominantly their mobility services and their call centers. Their bus lines, light rail, and subways are running normally. While no hacking group has taken credit for this attack, hackers continue to target municipal disability services. So if you're in that business, it's time to make sure your protections are deployed and current. Verify MFA updates, monitoring, and alerting are also fully deployed on and active. And of course, I'm not blaming those people who have no choice but to use the paratransit service. There's a reason paratransit exists. I completely understand it. It has taken me to a place where a bus just wouldn't take me. And it was cheap. Was it reliable? That could be debatable. But this is just not a Los Angeles problem. I've talked to other people in other states around the country on telephone lines who have told me that paratransit is bad. It's there. It's available. But it's bad. Each person's mileage is going to vary. And I've chosen not to use paratransit because of the fact that it could be an all-day trip. Not that my trips to downtown Los Angeles are all day anyway, but exacerbated by whether paratransit will even pick you up in a reasonable time, let alone leave you there for 2 to 3 hours like they've done me in multiple cases. I'm not going to go ape on paratransit. It's got its uses, and it's a requirement by law. Know that those of you in Maryland, I am thinking of you. Not because there's anything I can do, but because I understand your pain with you having problems right now changing your rides and getting the trips that you need changed. The fact that nobody has taken responsibility for this unselfish act is unconscionable. And as one of the people who serve on the Accessibility Advisory Committee at Los Angeles Metro said, when is this going to stop? I did hear about this on the CyberWire, and I went looking through their show notes to find the article, which I read, and we blogged. And yes, we talked about it as part of this week's Security Box, Program 252. This is unconscionable. And I hope that Maryland will take every effort to use the law to its advantage to find those responsible for this selfish act. Because the state is paying a subsidy of the cost to get you from one place to another, so you can pay somewhere between $1 and $4, if not a little bit higher, to get from one place to another. And I know paratransit prices vary. When I started in paratransit in 1998, depending on mileage, it was $1.50 to $4. So I completely understand what people are going through, and I hope that the state goes after whoever's responsible and punishes them with the book. For our comments on this, please listen to our news notes section of the Security Box, program 252, which will air after the Security Hour on the independent channel of 98.6 The Mix, or find it through the RSS feed by searching for Jared Reimer and selecting the technology blog and podcast in TSB, and listening to program number 252. You can also go to jaredtech.help, where you will find the article, at least one of them. There are other articles in the newsletter that are available and are linked from within the particular newsletter. This next item we also talked about as part of the podcast and is also available at the aforementioned jaredtech.help. Nevada cybersecurity incident is affecting the state's online presence and phone line services. The U.S. state of Nevada is experiencing state website and online services outages due to a cybersecurity incident that began over the weekend. And this is this past weekend, by the way. The state's main website and the Nevada Department of Public Safety's website have been unavailable. The outage has also affected online portals and phone lines, leading to the suspension of some in-person services. Dispatch phone lines for Nevada's Highway Patrol and State Police have been unavailable. Emergency services are operational. Officials have not yet said if the outages are due to an attack or another cause. As of writing, Neely was optimistic on them being open Tuesday to handle business. If the JRN sees any other updates, we'll pass it along. And I see that we had an issue, so I will have to regenerate the Braille file, because now we're reading this in grade 1, but that'll be fixed. Good thing I haven't given Braille to anybody yet. But this will be fixed before podcast release. Our final item today is prison sentence for Eaton Corp former employee and saboteur. In March 2025, Davis Liu was convicted of causing internal damage to protected computers. He had worked as a software developer at a Beechwood, Ohio-based Eaton Corp for nearly 12 years. Roughly a year prior to Liu's firing, a corporate restructuring reduced his responsibilities and access to company systems. In August 2019, Liu began sabotaging his employer's systems in several ways, including introducing infinite loops, deleting co-worker profiles, and adding a kill switch that would lock all users out of the system if his Active Directory access credentials were revoked. When his position was terminated in September 2019, Eaton staff around the world were unable to access the company's network, and some company data were deleted. Liu has been sentenced to 4 years in prison. And I'll say this before we read the editorial board. 4 years for deleting profiles, writing software to make things bad for a company is not enough. I am tired of this 5-year minimum crap for very severe issues like this. This is not a good sign. And he got caught because he used his own official work machine to make all of this work. But 4 years should not be enough for that. We're on page 15 if you would like to learn more about the editorial board of Sans News Bites. The editorial team of Sans News Bites include Brian Honan, Kurt Dukes, Chris Elge, David Holzer, Ed Scoutis, Gal Spitzner, Jake Williams, Dr. Johannes Ulrich, John Pescator, Josh Wright, Kathy Bradford, Lance Spitzner, Lee Neely, Mark Weatherford, Moses Frost, Suzanne Vatronaut, and William Hugh Murray. Sands is located at 11,200 Rockville Pike, Suite 200, North Bethesda, Maryland, 20852. If you would like a Braille copy of this file, you may email or iMessage me at jaredrimer at 986themix.com, text or WhatsApp 804-442-6975. And you can even request a 30-cell file if you need a 30-cell. We will be going in and fixing the Braille issues that we found while we were reading the file and making sure that that gets corrected for that file. I do notice that we did not fix all of the US and IT things that are required for us to fix. And I should mention that the files will be given to you in English Braille American edition. And unless it's necessary where UEB would make more sense, that's how the files will be given to you. If you would prefer a UEB copy, we can make one available to you. In fact, maybe what we'll do is we will make a UEB copy and an eBay copy, and you can ask for whichever copy you would like. And if you want 30 cell copies, we can make that happen. I'm Jared Reimer. The next scheduled newsletter will be on Friday, August 29th, and we hope to have that out before the beginning of September as we try to get back into a twice-a-week newsletter status. I also want to remind you that there will be no security box for Wednesday, September 3rd, as I will be out of the office on a metro expedition. I hope that everyone will enjoy. They have found the newsletter and my comments of value. Please feel free to contact me at any time with any questions, comments, or concerns. I don't claim to know everything, but we can work together to find solutions that might work for you. That's what it's all about. I will see everybody later. It's time for me to move along. Have yourself a great day.